Good afternoon, my friends. This is the Green Zone. My name is Locker Jamie. Back next week. Joining us on the Green Zone, it's JC Abbott from Three Down Nation. JC, thank you for your time today, my friend.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be on.
We'll start with your favorite summer blockbuster.
Well, I don't know if this is the correct response because I feel like superhero movies are somewhat of a genre of their own, but I have a very fond memory of going to see The Dark Knight at the only drive-in movie theater out here in the lower mainland in BC. It's a doubleheader, Get Smart and then The Dark Knight, one summer of my childhood. And that, for me, is the perfect summer blockbuster.
Jay, do you miss the drive-throughs, the drive-ins?
That's the one and only time that I've ever been.
Really? Okay.
And it was a great experience. I don't even know if the place is still open, but I'm glad I got to see one big-time movie in that old-school setting.
There's a handful of them out there still, I think, and I'm guessing there's probably a couple in Saskatchewan drive-ins. Yeah, drive-in movie theaters were more of a thing, but I'm showing my age right now. But I used to love, although I will say this, I don't remember spending a lot of time watching the movie when we were going to the drive-ins. It was more about the gathering, the party. JC, let's jump into CFL talk right now. And we've been having this conversation, and it's a worthy conversation this early in the season just based on how things have been playing out. But who's the best team in the CFL right now, in your opinion?
Well, I would have probably had a different answer if you asked me a day ago. But now that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have been shellacked, I have to say that it's currently the Saskatchewan Roughriders, right? You can't argue with undefeated. And frankly, maybe one of the reasons why you'd argue against them is also the reason I'd argue for them. It's that they've had so many injuries and so much adversity in terms of penalties and things like that, and they've still found ways to win. They've finished games. Guys have stepped up in various roles. I think they've been really impressive thus far. Now, in terms of talent, when fully healthy with Davis Alexander on the field, I think the Montreal Alouettes maybe are the most complete team right now.
Okay.
You know, that defense is something special. But their offense without Davis, I think, is much weaker than what Saskatchewan showed with the ability to go to the ground game with A.J. Ouellette last week.
We get a lot of conversations in town about the defense here in Saskatchewan with the Rough Riders. Comparatively speaking, between Saskatchewan and Montreal, who has the better chance of converting points from the defensive play?
Oh, I still think it's the Alouettes, right? They've got some special talents over there. But, I mean, Saskatchewan has proven that they can do that as well. Like, you're probably talking about two of the top three units for that in the league, in my mind, with Winnipeg being the other one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tavon Campbell, with his level of speed, when he gets the ball in his hands, we saw that a week ago, what he's capable of. I just think that the Alouettes are a little bit more consistent along the defensive line, or have been to start this season, and pressure is ultimately what creates turnovers, which creates opportunities to score. And they've got something special there with what Noel Thorpe does aggressively with that front, that I just think they're a little bit more likely to create those turnovers.
JC Abbott from Three Down Nation joining the Green Zone today. Should the Riders be concerned about the Stamps rolling into town next week on a Friday night for week six?
You certainly can't take them for granted, right?
Yeah.
This is a team that's got a lot of a positive momentum behind them, right? There were some questions those first two games of the season, maybe not against the toughest of opponents, and then they drop one to Ottawa, and frankly, what are conditions that you couldn't really judge their performance based off of, with all the wind and the rain that they were dealing with in that loss.
Mm-hmm.
But they come out against Winnipeg, and they look absolutely dominant in all three phases, I thought. And Vernon Adams Jr., I don't think he has peaked yet as a quarterback, right? He is still not the guy that we saw for flashes in BC when he was playing at an MOP level. He's starting to find it, but I think there is more yet to uncover from him in Calgary, and that should scare teams in the West. They can't be taken for granted like they have been the last year or so.
Yeah.
They are a legit contender.
JC, for the first time in franchise or in CFL history in the league, all nine teams dropped their negotiation list this week, and there's been a bit of a conversation about that. I'm wondering about your thoughts. Was that something that you thought was a positive development?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic development. I think anytime you can get more transparency to your fan base and give them more things to talk about throughout a season, then that is a positive, right? And for a long time, this was a big element of how CFL rosters were constructed that was completely left in the dark, that fans could only wonder about. Well, now it's out there. They can see the changes. They can see everything that goes on, and they can, you know, watch college football during the season and predict who might be the future stars in the CFL, watch NFL training camp cuts and wonder, okay, is this guy going to be available for my team down the stretch? I think having that conversation is huge. And also giving yourself a little bit more exposure in the States, right? Just in the last couple of days, how many articles have we seen from major U.S. news outlets talking about, well, Shedeur Sanders is on the negotiation list, or this player is on the negotiation list? That's a real positive when you get your name out there and these players actually get to see, okay, there's other opportunities out there. There's another league that may want me.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Dave Naylor was on yesterday. He is our CFL football analyst here on the Green Zone. And we had a quick conversation yesterday about the negotiation list dropping. And he didn't take credit for the fact that it's happening. But he did mention that at one point he bumped into Stuart Johnston, our new commissioner in the CFL, and said, hey, take a look at this. This might interest you. Because he was the one that had leaked the Shedeur Sanders on the negotiation list for the Toronto Argonauts. And I'm wondering, JC, if you had a chance, and Stu's the kind of guy that'll, you can bend his ear, and you can sit down and have a cup of coffee with him and talk about the game and about the league and his thoughts. He's very approachable. When we had him here live in the building, I ran into him in the hall and spent like 10, 15 minutes in the hall just chatting with him. Great guy. If you had a chance to bend his ear, is there anything in particular that you would bring up that you think should be changed or, I don't know, massaged? And the rouge is an acceptable answer, JC.
Well, I'm somewhat of a defender and a traditionalist when it comes to the rouge. But I will say Stuart Johnston is going through this process, and he's talking to, you know, longtime fans and media members, and he's asking our opinions. And one of the things I would bring up to him is just making, you know, like game film more accessible, right? You look at the way the NFL or college football is covered in such detail with all 22 film and people being able to break down things. Really, that's been sequestered only to TSN. There is a media film database. It used to include coaches' film. It doesn't anymore, but nobody except TSN is technically allowed to use that and put that out. So the video content is limited to one source. There isn't the level of depth and attention to detail in terms of the analysis that I think that this league truly deserves. And you could have fans and media members and former players, you know, breaking down the all 24 film, analyzing different schemes, setting up matchups. The more you have that out there, I don't think it detracts from your main broadcaster, but it accentuates the product and it gets more conversation going and it allows people to get even deeper involved in the product.
That's interesting. Have you brought that up with Stu?
It's something that has been raised by myself and my colleagues at Three Down Nation.
Well, you'll have to keep me posted on how that that develops, because that is a really good point. Scotty, the producer, is a fan of that direction as well. I have a feeling I know where you're going to go with this, but it's worth mentioning just based on the fact that the negotiation lists dropped. Do you think there's ever going to be a point where, and do you want to see a point where the CFL starts announcing the salaries of the players?
Yeah, I would love that. I think it creates so much fan engagement, to the similar points we were just making, right? The more things you can get people talking about when they're breaking down salaries, when they're trying to project the cap for next season, that creates more engagement and more committed engagement long term. Now, the flip side of this is I don't think it would be a huge marketing boost for the league, right? You know, most players are making, you know, just over minimum salary or minimum salary if they're coming into the league. That's not a sexy number in the big scale of professional sports. Mm-hmm. It's not bad money by any stretch, and there are guys who are making really, really good money playing in the CFL, and that should be noted, but it's not going to have anybody's jaw drop when they see those numbers. But on the flip side, I do have conversations with fans or casual sports watchers at times that think CFL players make a whole lot less than they actually do. So perhaps you can combat some negative narratives as well if you made that stuff public.
Yeah, well, there was sort of a narrative back in the past where if you played in the CFL, there was a strong possibility that you were selling Mazdas in the winter to cover off the rest of the salary, right? And I think that on some level that still sort of persists within the overall, you know, perception of the game. But you're right. I think we have reached a point where guys are making pretty decent money, making a pretty decent living playing football in Canada.
Absolutely, right? Like it's a little bit different for American players because they're paying double taxes and there's some additional expenses there.
Yeah.
But everybody is making what is above an average salary for somebody working in this country, right? You're not playing for peanuts. And the guys that do have second jobs, it's not necessarily out of necessity, right? It's to advance themselves for their post-football career. You look at guys like Adam Big Hill and what he's done working in the off season. Those are strategic decisions rather than decisions made out of desperation.
JC Abbott once again joining us from Three Down Nation. Not going to take up much more of your time. We got a week five schedule Thursday night or last night. Obviously, the Stamps getting a huge win in the inaugural Stampede Bowl. We've got a so-so Sunday nighter, Ottawa in Edmonton taking on the Elks. Looks like Nathan Rourke is going to be back for BC in Montreal. Davis Alexander is not going to be playing on Saturday night. And then the Friday nighter, Hamilton, Toronto. Give us a quick little 30 seconds, 45 seconds on your thoughts on tonight's tilt between the Ticats and the Argos.
Well, I thought the Argos really took a step forward last week and sort of rallied behind those critical comments from Ryan Dinwiddie the week before criticizing the team. I just don't know how much gas this team has without Chad Kelly in the lineup and with the amount of injuries they have. I think the Ticats are going to take this game, and I think it'll be not particularly close in my mind. I think it's going to be a bit of an emotional letdown for Toronto.
There is JC Abbott. Thank you for your time today, my friend.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
And we are looking at you for summer blockbusters. If you've got a favorite or maybe you just want to request a song because it's Friday, let me know. 877-332-8255. Maybe you want to weigh in on the best team in the CFL. Is it now the Saskatchewan Roughriders at 4-0 because of the Bombers' loss in Calgary last night? It might be. Again, the Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255. This is 980 CGME and 650 CKOM. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Locker, I'm flying solo this week. Jamie's back on Monday. He generally takes the bye weeks off in the summer when the Riders aren't playing. Riders are back in action next week. That was from the Caddyshack soundtrack. Scott, that's one of his favorite summer blockbusters. There was another. There was two Kenny Loggins tunes off of that soundtrack. What was the other one? I'm All Right. That's it. That's more memorable for me. That song. That one says Caddyshack right away. Good pull. There you go. Anyway, we're taking your requests through the course of the day and your favorite summer blockbuster movies. You know what I might go see? I might go see that F1 this weekend. That looks like it's I'm a bit of a Brad Pitt fan, but I'm looking forward to that. Might go check that one out. The host of the Sports Market Weekends here on CJME and CKOM, Tom Manek, is up next on the Green Zone. Again, this is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. There we go. Good call, Darby. The Green Zone, Jamie and Locker flying solo this week. Jamie's back next week. We're doing summer blockbusters, your favorites. We're kind of squeezing in some music with it as well. It's a Friday, all request Fridays. So if you can work a tune into it like Darby did, her favorite summer blockbuster was The Graduate, then we'll cover you off. And we've got the host of the Sports Market Weekends here on CGME and CKOM, Tom Manek, is on the line with us. Let's start with your favorite summer blockbuster, Tom.
Well, Locker, you know, it might wind up being the story of an undefeated Saskatchewan Roughriders team. You know, that's a good docudrama that we could maybe have come around later on this summer. But, you know, I think I'm still of the view that the best blockbuster I still haven't seen yet. I've seen F1, and I love it, and it will do so well at the Sport Market Movie Awards. I think Brad Pitt is uniquely cast in the role, and I think it was quite an authentic take on, you know, life in F1. My blockbusters tend to be PGG these days, simply because of, you know, having an eight-year-old at home. She would vote for How to Train Your Dragon as being her favorite blockbuster.
Okay.
But I'll put it out there that despite my connection to Jurassic Park and the Raptors naming back in the day, I'm most looking forward to Superman. And I think that'll be an interesting one. On the Jurassic World front, you know, the Rebirth sequel, I have probably seen Jurassic Park maybe 20 times, the original, and it wound up being an inspiration for the naming of the Toronto Raptors back in the day. So I'm personally most connected to the Jurassic World sequel and look forward to seeing that this weekend.
That's with
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson. I've heard mixed reviews about that one so far, but that's out this weekend. F1 dropped last weekend. I actually plan on going to that. We don't go to the movies very much, my wife and I, but she actually brought up, I think she might have a bit of a crush on Brad Pitt, but she brought up going to F1 this weekend. So I'm going to check that one out. So that's a good one, though?
Obviously I'm biased to being a big sport movie buff, but F1 was directly involved. They allowed the use of the F1 trademark,
yeah,
the actual title of the movie, which is very unique. But despite that involvement and despite Lewis Hamilton being an executive producer of the film, it really feels authentic, and it feels that it's not an in-house F1 production, so to speak. The way the the cockpit filming is done is very, very unique. The way they showcase technology that is involved in F1 and how these are truly athletes whose lives often depend on the turning of a dime, heat, tire heat, all those kinds of things are out there. You learn a heck of a lot, and we're entertained a heck of a lot. And I know your wife will love Brad Pitt in the lead role.
There you go. Let's jump into some more like business side of sports conversations here. For some reason, the telecommunication companies still have the most money of any company in the country. Probably has nothing to do with them robbing us every month. The latest deal for Rogers with BCE, so Bell, just closed. They now own a majority of the Maple Leafs Sports and Entertainment. That's a 75% stake in the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Toronto Raptors, the Toronto FC, and the Toronto Argonauts. Overall, in your opinion, is this a positive for sports fans, Tom?
You know, I mean, first of all, with the full disclosure that there's a direct connection between the Sport Market and Sportsnet Radio from coast to coast, with that sort of out there, so our listeners know the connection. I think it is a positive simply because of what Rodgers is revealing about its strategy. It is taking every opportunity to basically remind people or reiterate with people that they're heavily invested in sport and they see a long-term future in terms of sport and sport content. Bell Media hasn't been as bullish in recent years, and they've withdrawn on the sports radio side of things. And they've now withdrawn in terms of the 37.5% of the largest sports and entertainment, company in Canada. And so they both have made tremendous contributions over the years, but it sure seems like Rogers is prepared to walk the walk and talk the talk going forward. And if you have an engaged corporate partner, you have a really good corporate partner. If you have a corporate partner that truly sees its sports holdings and sports broadcast holdings as contributing to the bottom line and is prepared to help make them successful, I think that's a positive. So I do think that it's a good outcome and probably preferable to a number of other scenarios that might have been out there.
When you take a look at this group, this Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, from the CFL side of things, one would go, okay, well, they got the Leafs, they got the Raptors, they got the Toronto FC, they got the Argos. Is there going to be a case where that, the CFL isn't going to be as big a priority as the other three? I mean, that's just a safe assumption. Does that mean that this deal could have a negative impact on the CFL, or should we just put that aside for now? Because you do hear that, Tom.
Well, and I think it's understandable why we would hear it. If you look at, the last 20-plus years where Bell Media and TSN have made big investments in the Canadian Football League and have been very prominent partners. Rogers hasn't had that background, at least in three down football. They've been pound for pound in terms of hockey. They've been pound for pound, in terms of the Toronto Blue Jays with the full 100% investment there. So if you think of, okay, which sport properties might be more vulnerable with Rogers as a 75% owner, the Argos might fall into that category.
Yeah.
Having said that, Rogers also understands what these sports properties mean to their fans, and certainly anything that might change on that front will be very thoughtfully considered, because you don't want to have pushback from fans of a sport that is iconically Canadian and in the Grey Cup has become a Canadian institution. I think they could very well just view this as another content piece that they want to animate and be a healthy part of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I will say that what's more likely is you'll see some impact from the marriage of the 100% owned Toronto Blue Jays with the 75% owned other properties. You're now in a position where there could be more shared resources on the marketing side, on the sales side, between the Jays and the other MLSE properties. Jays will continue to be run, as a separate unit, but I think over time you might see a migration to the centralized management team headed by Keith Pelley, having more of an oversight role with the Toronto Blue Jays as well.
Tom, how much do you know about Keith Pelley and what he does from a strategic point of view with the companies that he runs? Because this is not a new thing. He didn't just decide that he wanted to be the president of this organization. He's worked his way into this role and has had some major success outside of this current role.
Yeah, absolutely, Locker. And listen, I know Keith Pelley. I've had the privilege of first meeting him 25 years ago back in the day, watched him progress on both sides, Rodgers and Bell, over the years. And you ask what makes him tick. He is a very a strategic thinker. And, you know, the status quo is never safe. He's never afraid to try something new and to bring some innovation in. And what's interesting is
he is showing it already.
And it's interesting, Locker, because on the sport market pitch, you know, on the sport market, on Rocco Radio in Saskatoon and Regina, we a few weeks ago made the suggestion that Keith Pelley should handle the Leafs the same way as the Raptors. And so if he was going to keep a team president, he should do it for both. Well, they made the decision to remove Brendan Shanahan, and I was still of the view that, well, look, it'll be interesting to see, because now you've got an asymmetrical situation. He obviously knew that he was going to anticipate some changes on the Raptors' side of things, and so now it is symmetrical. There's no team president of the Leafs. There's no team president of the Raptors.
Yeah.
Keith Pelley himself is going to play a more hands-on role there. And I think that's very revealing of the kind of chief executive officer that he wants to be. He wants to marry the commercial interests of the organization with the fans' interests, which is winning a Stanley Cup, winning another Larry O'B.
We'll stay with CFL here for just a second here, Tom. Tom Anik joining us. He is the host of The Sports Market, which you can catch weekends on CGME and CKOM. Now, the negotiation lists this past week were released by all nine teams in the CFL, and this is the first time it's happened. And there's a conversation that Stu Johnston, who is the new commissioner in the CFL, may have thought that this was a good idea, and that from his position, pushed this down to the teams and said we should get this out there without getting a good reason as to why they don't do it. And now there's the conversation about some of the other things that don't happen in the CFL when you start comparing the CFL to other leagues. And one of those things is salaries. So I'm interested to get your thoughts, Tom, on the pros and cons of the CFL potentially moving in that regard, where teams would make it public what their players are making.
Yeah, I personally think it's overdue for additional transparency. And I say that in this era of social media, digital media, there is so much out there. And if you think you can protect a player's salary, for a year or more, I don't think you're drinking the right coffee, kind of thing. And I think that if people are going to find it out anyway, why not have the official revelation of the salary? There's all kinds of examples in the public and private sector of special cases where you have to list the salary range of a job that's up for hire. You have to reveal the salaries of your top executives. In that environment, I think it would be catch-up football by the the CFL to be more open with these kinds of numbers, because anything that has more people talking about the CFL is good for three-down football. And if you make it hard for people to see the full picture, you're making it hard for fan engagement. So on negotiating lists, on salaries, on some of this other stuff, you know, I would encourage the CFL to be as open as it possibly can, because every ounce of additional media attention is a good ounce for the league.
Tom, one last one, and you can make it quick if you want, but Joey Chestnut just finished 70.5 hot dogs and buns to win the 17th mustard belt. Joey Jaws Chestnut claims Nathan's famous 4th of July hot dog eating contest top prize for the 17th time in his life. He's in his early 40s. And we had a conversation this morning in the Green Zone Lounge. We're baffled by this. it is very confusing to us how huge this is and how much press this gets every 4th of July. What is this?
It is Americana, number one. It's Americana on the 4th of July, where all things are designed to be bigger and better than anything else, including the number of hot dogs you can put in your belly. And I think it's just traditional. It's a story that's built in significance over the last couple of generations and taken to new heights by Joey Chestnut. Even his name is more like a Hollywood name, and it makes people sort of feel comfortable and you know, connected to him, because hey, he's Joey Chestnut. The fact that he has become such a celebrity drives the whole thing. And we saw a couple of years ago when he was taken out because of an endorsement with a separate hot dog or meat product.
That was last year, right?
That was last year, exactly. Thank you.
The hot dog controversy. Oh my goodness!
And it shows you how serious the stakes are. The fact that this has been appointment television is the other reason why it's so big. If this moved around and sometimes was in March, sometimes was in July, sometimes was in September, it would have nowhere near the currency. But because this is a 4th of July institution, it's taken to the next level. People are trained to look for it, and Joey Chestnut has made himself an even bigger celebrity because of the way he's handled his media access.
Tom, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Hey, have a terrific rest of the week. And, of course, 4-0 Saskatchewan Roughriders. I don't want to jinx anything, but what an impressive start.
Beautiful. And they're back at it week 6, Friday night. Calgary Stampeders in town. Looking forward to it. You can catch Tom Mannix, the Sports Market, right here on CJME and 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I think a big part of the reason why that movie was so successful is because of the music. This is the Green Zone. Jamie and Locker. Jamie's back next week. We had that come in from Eddie in Regina. Isn't the best summer blockbuster Jaws? I think it was the first. I'm not positive on that, and movie buffs might be able to correct me if I am wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, that movie was sort of the beginning of the summer blockbuster. So I think it was a 50-year anniversary here recently. 1975, that came out, and there you go. We were also chatting with J.C. Abbott, and he brought up his summer blockbuster and watching it at the drive-in, and we had a text from Kyle out of Saskatoon. He said, Locke, I believe there are two surviving drive-in theaters in Saskatchewan, one near Swift Current, we'll have to look into that. I wonder if that's something that'll ever come back. You know how stuff is cyclical and it does come back, like vinyl's a thing again? I wonder if the drive-in movie theater will ever be something that we bring back. Anyway, interesting. Thank you for all the texts today. Keep them coming. And the Green Zone fan line, 877-332-8255 is the number if you want to call or text requests, your favorite summer blockbuster. We'll drop the gloves next with Drew Remenda on the Green Zone. I'm going to get Drew's thoughts on his thoughts on whether or not Jonathan Toews is going to have enough, like what kind of an impact he's going to have with the Winnipeg Jets. That's next. 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.